Hey guys, welcome back to part two of our discussion with Henrik. In this episode, we will have the listener questions for Dividend Athlete. We will do some portfolio review, and we also have our stock pick of the week coming up from Dividend Athlete as well. So stay tuned.
Let's go to some of the listeners' questions then now, and there are quite a few. And the first one, as always on our show, is from Phil. And he is asking us about diversification. He is wondering, for all three of us, what we think about how many stocks you must have, let's say, as the lowest to call yourself diversified. So he's checking our opinions here.
Yes, I think if I look at the research, I think you get most benefits of diversification with somewhere around 20 picks. I think that's after that, you know, the benefits of diversification kind of are not as profound anymore, especially if you look at, you know, you take 20 stocks and let's say 22 stocks and you have, let's say, two stocks from each sector. If you divide it into, let's say there's 11, you know, main sectors. Mm-hmm. So I think with 20 or 22, you could be already quite well diversified. Personally, I like to own a bit more stocks in my portfolio. You know, I think somewhere around 40 mark is where I would feel very well diversified. But obviously, you obviously have to take into account that you need to really like investing and you need to really like to go through annual reports if you want to hold that amount of stocks in your portfolio.
No, I would have said 11, one per sector to be completely diversified. But like you, I want to have 32 stocks. I only have 21 at the moment, so I still have plenty of room to add more. But I don't think you need too many to be completely diversified.
So when I look at Ray Dalio, what he says, and it's not so much about stocks, but just in general about diversification, I think beyond 10, it doesn't really add a lot of additional value anymore. But from a psychological point of view, for me, 10 feels so little. So I wonder how I would feel if I have just 10 stocks and holding on to them and also not buying others when I see others on the dip or something like that. So I think for me, just 10 would be really hard. And that's why my ideal is the same as you, Henrik. It's 40 stocks, just because I've done it in layers and I would then never lose more than 5% of a stock goes bankrupt, our company.
I really like reading, Ray Dalio's work as well. But I think what he's looking for is a little bit different as well, you know, with his, he's trying to look for some assets that are not correlated and things like this. And
yeah,
just in dividend stocks, you're going to be in a way you're quite concentrated in one asset class already. But also, I think the way I look at it sometimes is I don't want to have, if dividend income obviously is my main goal, I don't want to have too much income coming from one stock, you know, to have, if I would only have 10 stocks, let's say, one of them cuts their dividend for whatever reasons, then I'm losing quite a bit of my income already. So that would be too much risk for me from that sense.
Yeah, you'd want to back yourself pretty well to pick just 10 stocks and believe you're going to outpace the market for forever. So I think as retail investors, anywhere over 20 to 30 is probably enough. Okay, so we move on to the second question, which is from the Wolf of Harcourt Street. And he has asked, who is your favorite athlete investor?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good question. I think for me, most of the time you hear about athlete investors, they're going to be, you know, your super famous athletes. You know, they're going to be LeBron James or somebody like that. You're going to hear that he invested this into this or that. But it's obviously those sort of investments that you hear about, they're going to be obviously private investments. And as a private equity investor, they're going to be looking at totally different deals than what I'm looking at. So if somebody, you know, their advisor, somebody has gotten them into those private equity deals, it doesn't really, I don't know, it's not something that I'm personally that much into. So it's not something that I could say that I have a favorite in that sense. I think probably my really favorite investor would be somebody that played, let's say, and didn't have the best career, but made, you know, a decent living, but managed to be really prudent with his finances. So I'm really hoping that story is going to emerge. But as I'm thinking, that's not going to make much headlines, you know, if somebody most people have never heard of has, you know, diligently invested into even an index fund or ETF and had great results with it. I would like to hear that sort of a different kind of success story, because I think that would really put things into a better perspective, that you don't need to have access to those special private deals at an early stage that, you know, their status gives them access to. You know, really nice to have somebody from let's say not that well-known person, but who's just been really diligent with their finances. That would be my favorite investor athlete.
So mine would be, and he has a similar story to what you were saying, is Dion Dublin. You might have heard of him. He played for some top clubs in the UK, but he wouldn't have been earning huge amounts of money at the time he played, and he finished, and he's become this huge property developer, and he's gone on to have shows about this as well. So he was really prudent with money, considering the era which he grew up. Finances and money, they all just went out on the piss after games, for example. So he's done really well for himself, and he'd be my favorite at the moment.
I have literally no clue.
Okay, so we'll move on to Tiago's question, and he has asked us, where do you get your information on earnings dates that you use to make those one pagers you tweet when earnings are upon us?
Yeah, I think that one is for me here. Well, I just go for the European stocks, right? I just go to every investor relations website. I've got like a list of 150 to 200 stocks. And every quarter or so, I check the ones that I didn't capture the dates from yet. And that's what I use, because any of the online services is not really reliable or not accessible to easily do that. And from the American stocks, I take them from the NASDAQ list. I found the NASDAQ list quite accurate, and more accurate than the Yahoo list. And then the next question, maybe from Gonzalo Jose Pinto, is saying, looking at the top names like Buffett and Munger, we constantly hear about focusing a lot in a winning business instead of a diversified portfolio. What's your advice to someone who's starting dividend investing but has limited capital? Follow which method? So go straight away for diversification or more for big few people? So let's assume limited capital being 5,000 euro.
Yeah, I think it's obviously depends a lot of on what whatever you feel most comfortable with, because and what's going to help you stay motivated on that path. Because to be honest, it's the good news is, or it's good news, bad news, that the first 5,000 is not going to make a huge difference in your financial future. You know, the what's going to make a difference is you sticking to it and putting money to it for decades to come, and then having a clear plan of how you do that. But I would personally think that, you know, people talk about, I want to find a big winner or something. It's easier said than done, you know. I think a lot of content I see online is also like, oh, this is a hot sector or that is a hot sector. You know, a hot sector necessarily doesn't mean that it's going to turn out to be a great investment. You know, not everybody knew internet was going to be big, but not every search engine became Google. You know, there was a lot of bad companies in that space, or not bad companies, that just couldn't compete. So I like to be diversified, because I think from the start, if I can if I get somebody who, for example, wants to start investing and they only go in with one stock, you know, and they see that one stock is moving up and down, they can kind of feel like, well, it's really, really volatile. So if you even get a little bit of diversity from the start, it's gonna help you maybe smoothen that ride, and it's going to help you stick to it in the long run, which is what I think is more important than the returns of what you get in the first investment. Is it going to be something that you can easily stick to for the long run? And I think having a bit of diversification already in the first place is going to help you, especially on the psychological side of it.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it, for investors with limited amount of capital, because as humans, we're probably programmed to think in whole value terms and not percentage terms. So we look at the returns Buffett gets, and we see, wow, he makes so much money. But if you compare that to a percentage, you could earn the same percentage as him, because it's a lower money value. You don't see the actual value that you're earning. So it is hard. My advice to someone like that is to stick with it. Invest what you can afford. Okay, if you can't afford it, then don't invest. Invest what you can afford. And if you really want to be diversified, stick to ETFs at that level and play it from there.
Yeah, but the only thing I still want to say here is that I love Buffett and Munger, right? I read all the books, and at least that I've seen. And it's good to get inspired from. But there's one big difference between Buffett and Munger and us. And you touched upon it before, Henrik. They have access to information that we don't have. They have CEOs calling them to invest in their stocks. Yeah, they get whole presentations if they want it. It's not a level playing field. So from someone like Buffett, it's more easier to say, I think, this, because he has a lot of information at hand. And he still makes mistakes with his IBM purchase, right? So in this case, I would not use Buffett and Munger kind of as a yardstick to measure yourself against, unless you have the same access to information. But I think most of us don't have that.
Yeah, I think it's a great point as well that although you say that it's not a level playing field, but also it's you have to think that everybody, this sort of financial markets or the stock market, is somewhere where people, a lot of stuff is happening and there's buyers and sellers, but you also have to think that people are kind of playing different games on the same playing field. You know, you have your day traders, you have your big institution, you have people taking on huge risk, you have index funds, you have everybody playing on the same sort of field. Focus really on what you're doing and not look at other people, what they're doing in terms of their returns as well. You know, you see somebody, I don't know, somebody says they made a lot of money on a speculative bet, but you know, they're not going to tell you the money they lost on the five previous speculations. So it's kind of like just really sticking to your own lane is, I think, really crucial.
Okay, Margin Call from Norway has asked us, do we have any Nordic companies on our watch list?
I don't have anything personally, although I looked the other day into Orkla, I believe a supermarket chain, but I'm passing on to it for now because I have enough consumer staples in my portfolio, so I don't need another one. But if I would look at one in Norway, I would probably consider that one. And we can put the ticker of the ticker symbol in the description of this podcast. Yeah.
For me, I think I looked at a couple ones that have been interesting, but not quite comfortable to invest in those. They're sort of in that pile where I'm gonna see how they do, and I'm gonna read their reports and try to learn a little bit more about the business. The one from Finland is Kona. It's called. It's like the company that makes elevators. I'm sure. Whenever you go to an elevator, see the company that's made it, it's probably going to be this company. It's KONE. Quite an interesting business. Obviously, it's tied a lot to the housing market and things like construction permits and whatever. How's things looking in terms of? It's quite sensitive to how the economy is doing, let's say, because obviously it relies on construction. But they seem to have such a strong market position, because like pretty much every country I go to when I'm in an elevator, it seems like it's from that company. So that's why I first started looking into it, and it's quite an interesting company, but just always kind of looks too cyclical for me to invest in.
Cool. I usually just reach out to Dividend Dane or Alan when I'm looking for Nordic companies. They usually point me in the right direction. Okay, the last question then is from Peter. And he has asked us, where do we buy stocks that are available on several exchanges? For example, Johnson & Johnson is available on the New York Stock Exchange and the Xetra, X-E-T-R-A exchange.
So I always purchase them in the local stock exchange. So if it's Johnson & Johnson, I would buy it on the New York Stock Exchange. And the reason for that is liquidity and volume. So I just feel more comfortable that if something happens to a stock, that I can much more easier get rid of it. And that's really, really the only reason. So I'm because I know some people, they want to buy everything in Germany, also maybe from a tax point of view, right? Or in the Netherlands, in a lower tax country. So buy German stocks in the Netherlands so that you get the 15% dividend withholding tax on that one or something like that. I'm not doing that. I always buy local in every exchange due to the volume and the liquidity.
Yeah, I'm the same. I always buy the local listing as well.
Okay, cool. So these were all the listeners' questions. Thank you all for asking them. Always nice to ask them. And I keep being surprised that we all the time get some different questions. So the repetition is not starting yet. Now, having said that, it's really interesting today because for the first time, we have also a new topic on the podcast, and it's a dividend portfolio feedback. So we're trying this out a little bit. So let us also know later after the podcast whether you liked it or not. So the idea here is that you submit your top five holdings, dividend holdings, and we can provide some feedback based on what we observe, some food for thought maybe, on what we think about the top five. So the first person that volunteered via our Facebook Dividend Talk group is Colin Boylan, and his top five are the following. So the first and the biggest stock that he has is AbbVie with 10% of his whole portfolio. Then Pfizer, it contains of 9% of his whole portfolio. Then Southern Co, not sure what the ticker is here, also with 9%. Unilever with 7%. And General Mills with 7%. So this makes up, I believe, 42% of his whole portfolio. Derek, dividend athlete, any thoughts when you see the top five of his portfolio?
Yeah, obviously quite a lot of well-known names. I couldn't quite catch the first one. What was the first one? Could you say that again?
AbbVie, the pharmaceutical. With the Hermira drug.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So obviously a lot of well-known names in there. I've come across pretty much all of them at one point, but I don't own any of them. I think Unilever has been on my watch list forever, but it just never seems to drop into a range where I'll be buying it. It's sort of one of those things where I have, let's say, a clear point of where I want to buy a stock, and it could be like 30 cents away from it, but I still wouldn't buy it unless it hits that sort of limit. And that's where I've missed out on Unilever a couple of times, when it's like been right close to it, but not quite there. So it's not, I've not pulled the trigger, but I've looked at a few different ones there as well. I think Southern Co, I think their ticker is SO, if I'm not mistaken. Obviously very popular amongst dividend investors, but like the combination of the yield and the growth rate wasn't quite interesting enough for me. But I think out of those five, Unilever is the one that I have some, let's say, personal dealings with, because it's just been not frustrating but a little bit funny to see how it's been like two or three times it's been really close to where I want to buy it, but not quite. So it's been on my watch list for what seems like forever.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice core holdings that he had. It's pretty nicely diversified. He's got two healthcare. He's got a utility. I think Southern Co is utility, and then he's got consumer staples. So it's you could say it's kind of a defensive kind of portfolio that I imagine that he has, which in the current market you can kind of understand. I'm happy with AbbVie. AbbVie is a super company. I know there's worries there about Humira, and we all know that's there. That's why they're undervalued. But I still think that I mean, their transition into Botox and all this is really good. So I've no issue with ABV. Pfizer, I'm not fully convinced about, to be honest. I know the COVID vaccine is a huge driver for them at the moment. They're at an all-time high. They were at that level, I believe, 10 or 11 years ago, and they just dropped off a cliff as well. So I'm not too bullish on them long term, really. But as I said, I haven't looked into that company 100% like the rest of them, so I could be completely wrong. Sauron Company, it's a utility. You know what you're going to get with a utility. Boring, high dividends, and so on. Unilever, we spoke about them in depth. Good. And General Mills, it's not a company I know a whole lot about, I have to say. I know it's consumer staples, but I mean, they're not in my portfolio. The only thing I would say is it's quite a large, like it's five stocks, you said nearly 50%, 40, 45%. It's a lot, isn't it? A lot of your portfolio in five companies. So that's one thing I would probably just be a little bit wary of.
Yeah, I think I don't know what Colin's goal is, but it's definitely a really defensive top five. And if you're looking at it from a defensive point of view, I think it's really a good set of holdings. Personally, I would spice it a bit up with more high growth yield. So not necessarily low grow, like a low yield, like below 1%, but something between 1% and 2% yield, and which could grow dividends like 10% per year or something like that. I would probably spice it up a little bit like that, but it really depends on Colin's risk tolerance, because all these five holdings I think are good holdings that will still pay good dividends in the upcoming few years. So good. Thanks, Colin, for being the first one. To the listeners, let us know if you would like us to do this more often, if you would like your own portfolio to submit and to maybe get some feedback on. So you know how to reach us. So Henrik, then maybe the last section of this podcast, actually quite popular by many listeners, is the stock pick of the week. And as a guest, we always give you the opportunity to share maybe your stock pick with us.
Sure. So I'm going to go with the company that I just recently added to. I think it was on Wednesday or something. Must have been Wednesday or Thursday when I added to my position there. You know, they just reported earnings, and they had a great half year, and I read through the earnings report, and I still didn't have quite a full position in the company, still some room to add, so I bought some more shares. So as it was my most recent stock transaction, I'm gonna go and talk about that one. So it's a German company, a German real estate company. It's called DIC Asset. The ticker is DIC. And it has really two sort of main business segments. You know, on one side, it's your regular REIT that just owns and leases out properties to tenants. You know, they have, I think the recent property that they leased out was to, it's like a Mercedes-Benz center in, so the Daimler, the company, is the tenant. But actually the REIT side of things, it's not so exciting about this company. What's really exciting is that the other business side is really fast growing. So they're also an asset manager. They help like pension funds and institutional investors to invest in real estate in Germany as well. And that side of business is growing really fast and growing the profits rapidly. You know, they recently launched another fund to invest in some logistics real estate, and that was closed really quickly. You know, a lot of demand for it, and I really like this side of their business because they only put in a little bit of their own money. The rest is funded by other investors and debt, and obviously they collect fees on the whole real estate portfolio of that. So and that side of business grew like something like 40% year over year. It grew 33% year over year, so really impressive. And over the last 4 years, it's grown at an average pace of between 30 and 40%. So actually this side of business is growing really fast. That's what I like. And it also pays a nice dividend, something like 4.6 at the current price. So quite a high dividend. It's well covered, and it's grown at a compounded annual growth rate of almost 14% over the last 5 years. So a nice combination of yield and growth there that I really like. So you have one side of business really, really boring and stable, and the other side growing fast. So that's gives you a quite nice mix of income and growth. And I just added to my position also, it's run up quite a bit already. You know, last year it was at around 11 euros per share when I started to accumulate the position. And I know sometimes people are hesitant to average up into their position. It sort of feels like, well, why am I increasing my cost basis here? But I was really confident of adding more shares at close to 15 euros per share, even after it's run up, you know, something like 35%, because I still believe it's worth more than what it's currently trading at, you know. And I, if you look at it, their sort of net asset value and the current funds from operations multiple they're trading at, I feel it's really a good pick at this point, and that's why I felt confident to add to my position.
Super. I must confess, I never heard of the stock before, and you made me really curious now. So after the show, I think I will look it up, because I like such businesses that have a core asset in there and then having diversification in it with, you know, still in the same kind of industry, but like a total different product there in the market. So yeah, really nice one. So I'll put the ticker also in the description of the podcast so that people can look it up when they listen to this.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you've really hit it on the nail there, because like, so that having that that core op, if they would have that other business segment in something totally different, that's something normally that would put me off, because I don't want to see a company that I own trying to do something completely different, you know, that they are sort of leveraging their experience and know-how in this sector and finding a more, let's say, high margin way for them to generate profits from it. So that's what I really like, and especially seeing how quickly the assets under management are growing and the popularity of their funds. That's really giving me confidence, and it's a business that I like to monitor, because they are growing fast and seem to be doing a lot of the right things, and it's good to see something that's still undervalued by my estimates, because it's certainly getting harder and harder to find in current environment.
I think the key thing there is, and you mentioned, is the assets under management is growing fast. We know companies that know asset management, reputation is vital, and they if they have no reputation, they just stay stagnant or they decline. So the fact that they are growing means that there is institutional support out there for them. And just looking at their share price, I mean, their all-time high was back in 2008. They were at 30 euro, so they're still a long ways off of what they were previous. So it looks like they have plenty of room to grow on that element. But as European DJI said, I've never heard of these before, but I've just quickly scrambled and wrote down, and I will definitely be checking them out this week. So thanks for that.
So with that, we came to the end of the show. Thanks for joining us today, Hendrik. And I must say, I'm really impressed by your knowledge that you accumulated as a professional football player, because I can imagine that focuses a lot on training and staying in shape. But when I hear you talking about stock picks and such, I think you're pretty well proficient in finance, and it sounds like it sounds like you might have a career in that afterwards. When I hear you talking, I'm really impressed with your knowledge about all of this investing and such.
Thanks, and obviously thanks for having me. You know, really like what you guys are doing with it as well, because you know, we all know that dividend investing is hugely popular in America, and there's a lot of resources and material on that over there. But to have that European twist to it, you know, I think it's so refreshing. Obviously, because I'm from Europe and I've lived here all my life, it's nice to see from this sort of European point of view on it, because it's definitely something that is not as well well covered in Europe as it is over in the US. So it's a pleasure to be on here, and keep up the good work, guys.
And just before we go, I do want to mention your website. It's a fantastic resource, so I recommend all our listeners to check it out. It's dividendathlete.com. You've got, as I said before, you've got ebooks, you've got membership, you've got blog articles, you've got a whole host of things there. So definitely go and check it out. And Henrik, thanks again. It's been really interesting for me to talk to a professional athlete. Always been my dream. It's my two sons' dreams in there as well. So hopefully they might get to your level and have a similar business head while doing it. But it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. We will leave it at that, and we will see you all next week.